It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The president must not repeat his mistakes of the recent past. President Trump, sign this bill.
If the text of the bill reflects the principles agreed to on Monday, it won't be a perfect deal, but it'll be a good deal.
That's a win for the American people. It's a compromise, and that's what appropriators do.
I would encourage the president to look at a continuing resolution and would help him to do that.
We haven't gotten it yet. We'll be getting it. We'll be looking for landmines. I don't want to see a shutdown. Shutdown would be a terrible thing.
Sandy Rios with you this morning. Well, the bill and its text was finally made available last night. 1,100 pages, that bill that would provide, what, $1.3 billion for the border wall and a few other little crumbs like that. But we're sure lots of other really bad things. Sandy Rios with you. I know if you're listening to Fox News this morning, they're all chipper about it and encouraging the president to sign it. But I'm telling you, that's not my position, and it's not the position of people in Washington who actually understand what's happening here. If you listen to Chuck Schumer in his slimy approach, the president, you must sign this bill and not cause another government shutdown. There's another clip. Actually, I should just go ahead and play it. I want you to hear how excited the Democrats are about this bill. That is clip four. Let's listen.
Again, we want to see what the final piece of legislation looks like. It's hard to say definitively whether or not the president's going to sign it until we know everything that's in it.
All right, I'm going to interrupt Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and yes, she's right about that, but I want to clip 11. My bad. Clip 11.
The overwhelming majority of the House Democratic Caucus will support this legislation.
It will invest more in border security. It'll invest in modern technology. It'll invest in more border fencing.
President Trump, in politics, to quote the Rolling Stones, you can't always get what you want.
So, is he slimy or what? Slimy just seems appropriate to me. Well, that's Hakeem Jeffries, Chris Coons, and then Chuck Schumer. Oh, they're so excited about this bill. So is Nancy Pelosi. So you know what? I'm just saying, if they're excited about this bill, look out. And so friends inside the Beltway are telling me that we better look out. And they are concerned that there will be phrases and parts of this bill, 1,100 pages, that will prevent the president from building this wall, that will give local authorities the power to override anything he might do, that will set in motion or put in law things that would prevent him from using that other money that he's been talking about to build the wall. These are the kinds of things we think they're folding into this bill. Now, here's the deal. They're pressing for a vote tonight in the House and the Senate. There's no way that people can read this bill. Does this sound familiar to you before tonight? This is what happened with Obamacare and countless other bills since then. Remember Nancy Pelosi famously saying, let's pass it and then we'll see what's in it. This is the point to which we have come in the United States Congress. Mitch McConnell wants to push it. Could I just tell you they're getting ready to take another recess? They're going to be going home this weekend, Thursday, probably. So they want to get this thing passed. For heaven's sake, they've got plans. So this is a very dangerous moment from my perspective. Once again, we're on the precipice. We don't know. I mean, maybe even as I've been show prepping this morning, there may be more details about what's in that 1,100 pages. But right now, we suspect but are not sure. But people are reading it fast and furiously. And I would also tell you that there are people right now lobbying the president in a very strong way to agree to a continuing resolution Don't sign this bill. Don't sign this bill. Don't sign this bill. Don't sign it till we've had a chance to read it. People who are, have your back have had a chance to read it. You may be signing away your ability to even do the things that you say you want to do. And so people are trying to persuade him, and I would ask you to join with me in praying that they will actually, he will hear them, because he's got other people around him saying, like, sign it, sign it, sign it. You've got, like, even Fox and Friends, which he listens to every morning. Oh, yeah, well, this is probably the best they can get, and so, you know, let's get on with it. We don't have to have a government shutdown. Oh, please, it's just so much more complicated than that. And so we don't want the president to sign this, and we want at least a 14-day continuing resolution. That means that the government would be funded for 14 days more. That would give them 2 more weeks to actually look at this bill and debate it and see if it actually says what the Democrats claim it says. I don't trust them. Do you trust them? Why would the president trust them? Mitch McConnell wants to go home. He's got plans. And so does Kevin McCarthy. They've got, and Nancy Pelosi, they got plans. Well, Nancy Pelosi would stay in town if she thought she could get something worse. That's the sad part about this. It's the Republicans who are the, you know, they like their breaks. When they like their breaks, and they care less for what's actually happening to the country than they do their own personal comfort and their own personal power. And so, I'm on a rant because I'm concerned about this. So many of us are asking the president to hold off and suggest and sign off on a 14-day continuing resolution and let Congress actually read this bill. Let the House read this bill. Let the Senate read this bill. Let them find out what's exactly in it before we jump off a cliff. And just to get down in the weeds a little bit more, just so you know, this is the way one person puts it. These are the Republican conferees. That means the ones on that conference committee that came up with this big soup. These are the Republican conferees who yanked the rug out from under the president, leaving him high and dry as the bad guy who would shut down the government all by himself if he doesn't pass this great bipartisan bill. And so they are Senator Shelby, Senator Shelley Moore Caputo, Senator Hoeven, I guess it is, and Senator Roy Blunt from Missouri, all encouraging the president to sign this wonderful masterpiece. Well, it may not be the best we can get, but, you know, we don't want a government shutdown. So then House members, and I don't know the name, first names are even where all these folks are from, but you might know, because I want you to know if they're your congressman. Granger, Graves, Palazzo, and Fleischman, all of them on this conference committee that came up with this mess, 1,100-page mess. And so this is basically what's happening. Now, what we're also hearing is that they are fighting over details. So we'll see, you know, we'll see if somebody finds their manhood and actually stands up against the Democrats on this. I kind of don't think so. I think Mitch McConnell's going to rush to get a vote. I certainly sure Nancy Pelosi will. And I think Kevin McCarthy's going to encourage his caucus. But I don't think the Freedom Caucus is taking this, or conservatives in the House. But the Democrats have the majority in the House. This is, you know, this elections do have consequences. I know you know that, but this is when they really do have consequences. All right, I want to talk about something. What can you do? You could call the White House and ask the president to don't sign this bill. Don't sign this bill, not yet, not till you've read it. Don't sign this bill until your friends have read it. Don't sign the bill until they've read it. That's what I would, that's the best thing we could do. And you could call your congressperson and your senator and say, don't vote yes on this bill until we've seen what's in it. You have to know what's in it. For heaven's sake, stop doing this. This is a dereliction of duty to sign a bill or vote for a bill when you don't even know what's in it. You can't do that. It's disgusting. It really is. It's just unbelievable. Would you do that in your place of business? Would you sign a contract for to buy a home? Would you do anything without actually, I recognize we sign contracts on social media things all the time without reading them, but for the most part, we are pretty diligent about seeing what we are agreeing to, aren't we? Yeah. So our representatives, not so diligent, happy to spend your money, happy to see under $22 trillion of debt, happy to put us in more debt. For the nonsense and the wickedness, really, that is the funding of the left. And so with that, I'll move to something else, because this is also ticking me off. And that is Ilhan Omar sitting on the Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives. Ilhan Omar, supported by the Council on American Islamic Relations, which is the PR voice branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, whose motto is, we love death more than they love life. Yeah, so she's been accused of anti-Semitism. Well, duh, you think so? When that is traditional, that's right down the mainstream Sharia law. And so, and now she's, of course, saying, oh, no, she's not anti-Semitic. But we know that she's going to be speaking at a dinner in Tampa, Florida, the end of this month for the Islamic Relief USA dinner, which is known as an organization that funds terrorism. She's speaking with a Yusuf Abdallah, who has encouraged violence against Israelis and Jews. But she's not anti-Semitic. Oh, no, 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 no. She's our friend. She's an American citizen sitting on that committee. Well, I want you to hear how that American citizen sitting on the committee sounded when she talked to Elliot Abrams, who's been charged to be the envoy to overseer of the Venezuelan situation from the American perspective. He served under the Reagan administration, and he served during the Iran-Contra controversy. But there was a war between the communists and those that wanted freedom in Central America. And under Reagan's leadership, we were very involved in that. So that's the background of this. Let's listen to listen to clip five first.
Thank you all for being here, and thank you for your testimonies. Mr. Adams, in 1991, you pleaded guilty to two counts of withholding information from Congress regarding your involvement in the Iran-Contra affair, for which you were later pardoned by President George H.W. Bush. I fail to understand why members of this committee or the American people should find any testimony that you give today to be truthful.
If I can respond to that.
It wasn't a question.
That was not a question.
I reserve the right to my time.
It is not right.
That was not a question.
Committee can attack
on February 8th,
who is not permitted to reply.
That was not a question. Thank you for your participation. On February 8th, 1982, you testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about U.S. policy in El Salvador. In that hearing, you dismissed as communist propaganda report about the massacre of El Mozote, in which more than 800 civilians, including children as young as 2 years old, were brutally murdered by U.S.-trained troops. During that massacre, some of those troops bragged about raping a 12-year-old girl before they killed them. You later said that the U.S. policy in El Salvador was a fabulous achievement. Yes or no, do you still think so?
From the day that President Duarte was elected in a free election to this day, El Salvador has been a democracy. That's a fabulous achievement.
Ilhan Omar, sitting on the Intelligence Committee, and of course, Elliot Abrams is Jewish. That's an aside, but boy, can't be really an aside. And sneering at him, mocking him, it was just chilling, honestly, bone chilling, because we know what Sharia teaches. And now we have four Muslim members of Congress. I have a problem with that. If they cannot put their citizenship and their love of America ahead of their devotion to Sharia law, which is the antithesis of American principle, and includes anti-Semitism always. It's not going away. It's not just a mood she's in. It's not something she can apologize for. And it's just, oops, I didn't mean that. She does mean it. If she embraces Sharia, which she does by the wearing of the hijab, trust me, we have a problem, Houston. We have a huge problem. All right, I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back. There's so much to tell you today. We're going to go to some email and Facebook posts from you. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
When an abortion-minded woman walks into a preborn pregnancy center, she encounters love and compassion
and gets to meet her baby by ultrasound.
And I was like, I'm going to go to the abortion clinic. And I already had my mind made up.
This mom didn't make it to the abortion clinic. Instead, God led her to a preborn center.
And the lady is giving me my ultrasound. She's like making these weird faces, and then she's like, it's two. And I'm like, I just start crying. I start texting my friends, and like, I can't.
The Ministry of Preborn was able to help this mom save not just one life, but two through ultrasounds. Preborn centers help save babies' lives and souls. Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
I'm Peter Rosenberger, and this is your Caregiver Minute. All too often, caregivers judge themselves without mercy over their performance. With a supremely critical eye, we berate ourselves while also allowing others to do the same. If we choose to judge ourselves, however, let's at least be fair and judge ourselves on the whole. For example, our attendance record, which is nearly perfect. We keep showing up. Yeah, sometimes we show up late while often feeling battered and bruised. Sometimes we're swearing under our breath like Yosemite Sam did in the old Looney Tunes cartoon. But we still show up. What is that worth? It's certainly worth taking a moment to acknowledge the extraordinary commitment and resolve of caregivers. And that includes you.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger, brought to you by Standing with Hope, a ministry for the wounded and those who care for them. There's more information at standingwithhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's no doubt the border compromise is a bad deal. So I'm really puzzled by Republicans suggesting otherwise. It's like putting cheese on bean curd and calling it a burger. President Trump wanted $25 billion for a border wall. That number dropped to $5 billion, not a penny less. That's what the president said. When the Democrats refused to budge, the president shut down the government, said he would keep it closed until he got the $5 billion. And we all know how that worked out. So the latest deal includes only about $1.3 billion for something called border barriers, and Republican leaders are celebrating like they just won the Super Bowl. The Democrats will never allocate any money for a border wall, not even a dollar, unless we could convince Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that a thundering herd of gassy cows was about to stampede across the border. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
If you have not called to support India Partners, this is the day to do it. We only have this is our second to the last day. And every day our goal has been to provide 1,000 days, a thousand days of rescue for these kids who are in the red light district of Mumbai, India. I mean, if you haven't, I know a lot of people don't ever want to go to India because of the things you've seen. And I can certainly testify to you that it's as dirty as they say. I remember trying to get in and out of the airport and having to step over bodies because people were just sleeping. All that's just everywhere. They sleep everywhere at night because they don't have homes and beds. And the kids, you know, of course, there are beggars and they overwhelm you. It's easy to dismiss them because you say, well, that's just that part of the world. But you know what? They have hearts and souls and minds just like your children. They have different values. You can't ever say that a person in a different culture is the same as you. Sometimes I think we make that mistake because they have been ingrained with a completely different worldview. That's why India Partners tries to tell them that there is one God, not thousands, as they've been taught. And there's a God who cares, who is a personal God, who it wants to pull them out of this and give them a new life, not only spiritually, but also physically. And so India Partners gives them a day of, more than a day, depending on what you give, that's how many days. They give them safety and shelter and clean clothes and schooling. And of course, then they hear about the God I just spoke of, the one true God who is in the business of saving and rescuing and redeeming people in the deepest sense of the word. So if you'd like to help, it's $7.08 for one day. And if you can be as generous as you possibly can, our phone number, the phone number for this is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or go to AFR.net, AFR.net. I have lots of email and Facebook this morning, again, which I really, really enjoy. And again, I say, I try to read everything that you send. Pretty much I have been doing that, but lately it's getting a little overwhelming. I love the opportunity to mention at least a few of the things that people are writing. So I'm just going to jump into this morning and give you an idea of what people are saying. I'm going to start with this one, even though I can't answer it. How about that? This is from Morgan. I talked about Abraham Lincoln and George Washington yesterday, and she says, good morning, Sandy. I love what you said this morning about learning more about Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. I have three kids who are into history, ages 16, 13, and 11. Can you suggest some good, trustworthy books for us to read together? And the answer is I can't think of the names of them. I just bought my grandson a whole series of biographies. They are used by, it's a homeschooling group, which is the one that is the classical homeschooling. If you can find out someone who does classical homeschooling, that particular series of biographies is the one that they recommend, and I do too. So I bought my grandson a bunch of those. Also, when it comes to Abraham Lincoln or George Washington, the general thing that I always say about these guys is if you can find things that were written about them close to their life, closer to their service, like after 1920, that's when history revisionism came into being. Like you'll read, like if you pick up a book about Abraham or Lincoln or George Washington that's written since then, you have to be very careful because they will attribute motives. I read one that just was a number one bestseller by, I think his name was Ellison, something like that. Because I love this stuff, I tried to read it, but because I knew what I did about George Washington, I was so repelled by what he said. He talked about Washington's ambition and how he wore his uniform to show off, and he's like one of the great historical novelists of this day, Joseph Ellison or something to that, something close to that. So I'm saying you cannot trust what's being written contemporaneously unless you absolutely know the person that's writing it and their credentials and that they have a commitment to truth and not their version of or their attribution of things they can't possibly know. That drives me crazy. So I'd say buy some of the earlier books written by people that knew him and them. And that's where you get your best history. And this is from Jerry. Jerry says, I listened to you talk about Abraham Lincoln this morning. Lincoln was no saint. Lincoln killed 600,000 Americans and starved to death thousands of women and children in the South. God had every right to take his two sons you talked about because he took so many of the sons from the people of this country, North and South. Slavery was the reason the South lost the war, but it is not the cause of that war. It was like an axle on which everything else turned. The political nightmare we are living is due to Lincoln, not because of him. He was the main instigator of government control we are now experiencing, which will eventually lead to totalitarianism. Okay, so Jerry, this is interesting. I recognize that people, you didn't say where you're from, but I know that people in the Deep South have a very different view of Abraham Lincoln, and actually the left does too. They've been pushing a narrative for a long time that the war was fought over economic reasons, and I'm sure it was in part, certainly, rivalries. But it's also true that Abraham Lincoln led with the slavery issue. He did that with his debates when he ran for Senate in Illinois in whatever year that was. I'm turning this off the top of my head. So that was a huge issue to him. It was a huge issue for his family. You can see that when you go to Kentucky and see his childhood home there, that his father was did not embrace slavery. It's just real interesting. It's the kind of history that you don't often get. And then Harriet Beecher Stowe's the book, the Uncle Tom book, was one that just stirred people in an incredible way. I think that they were anti-slavery, whites in the North, and probably some in the South too. I recognize that book as hated by Black Americans. I read it books on tape. I got the books on tape version of that several years ago when I was on radio in Chicago, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. And of course, Uncle Tom was a strong Christian, and a lot of the theme of it is his enduring his suffering. He went through terrible things, separation of his family, and all of this. And the theme of it is that he, through God's grace, rose above it and did not become embittered. That's kind of the theme of it, and that's why the left hates it so much, because it really is a pattern of, it's kind of like a Martin Luther King approach to injustice. Rather than violence or anger, it was like just steady living out his character, and his character was incredible. So that book actually was a great inspiration for Northerners to get to abolish slavery. It was the book Uncle Tom, even though, again, I would encourage a lot of you to look at that and just see. Jerry, we probably will never agree on this. All I can say is I've read so much about Lincoln, his own words, his own thoughts, and I find him to be a man of incredible character. I am won by what comes out of his mouth and his head. I guess, you say he killed 600,000 Americans and starved to death thousands of women and children. That's kind of I'm sure it's a pretty broad sweep, don't you think? It was a war, and that was the result of a war. I don't think he chose that. He didn't choose that. The secession is what started that string of events. So anyway, we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. This is all random and not in any kind of order, so forgive me. This is from Sharon in Kansas. She says, I think Congressman Ilhan Omar is a fox in the hen house. Yes, Sharon, I would say you are right about that. And I want to read right away. Where is it? Here it is. This is from Tim, and I'm not giving his last name. I might, because I don't think he would mind, but he loves to listen to the show, and I'm not going to read all that part. But he says, I'll read his last name. I don't think he would mind this. No, I'm not going to, because this is an email. So he says, I'm Tim, a retired Army chaplain, Christian college professor, and recent North Carolina State Senate candidate. I ran for office in large part due to you and Tony Perkins' words encouraging Americans to get out and go for it. You were also an encouragement to me with your words today about keeping on doing the right thing, and it eventually will get through. Running for office, these things came across to my wife and I. Going door to door, my wife and I had a great time. Wonderful people of all parties and races. I don't think we met one nasty person. We noted that while there are some who are politically astute, we were amazed at how many folks really don't have a grasp on political details outside the mainstream media information. The traditionally Black pastors in our area are hardcore left and pro-abortion and will do what they can to keep folks like me away from their people. They push them en masse to vote Democratic. I don't know how to break it into that crowd. To complicate things, the white evangelical churches did next to nothing to inform their people of the issues, and worse yet, teach them how to live out a biblical worldview. My own church, a megachurch, had two state Senate candidates as members, and neither one of us were given a few moments to introduce ourselves. The Black churches didn't see any problem in bringing candidates of the left to speak in their churches. The most alarming thing we noticed is how our elections in North Carolina, as well as elsewhere in the USA, are being stolen. Having kept what's called walk books from two elections, I have address after address in those books that list people who voted with those addresses, often four times and more names. And when I ask about those names, the current occupant had no idea who I was talking about. When you include California with its provisional ballot box stuffing after Election Day that is technically legal, and Maine taking away votes from a sitting congressman, Colorado, and more, It reminds me of what Joseph Stalin said when he remarked that it is not the voter that counts, but the one counting the votes. President Trump had a highly motivating speech the other night. I don't think the left cares. They just want power and will find legal ways to steal the election. And when they do, it is like what I think I heard you say one time, conservatives will never win again. I find this discouraging and I'm not sure what to do. I can't break the hold the left has on our black population. I do not know how to call out the evil behavior of the Democratic Party when so many of them are going to church every Sunday, singing sweet hymns to Jesus. At this point, looking at the big picture, I don't see much hope for the nation I served for 32 years. For me, I would like to keep doing the good you talk about to see if I can eventually get people's attention. Just not sure how to do it in a way that will influence people to vote for godly values. And I'm going to give his name. I don't think he would mind. This is Dr. Tim Lever. He's a professor of theology at in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Tim, let me just say this. First of all, I have nothing to correct about what you've laid out here. I know that what you're saying is true, and I don't need to repeat or embellish anything that you said there, because what you said about black churches characteristically and evangelical white churches, pretty much mainstream, you're spot on in both of those cases. There are exceptions to each of those, but not many. But you say, I'm going to read again, not sure how to do it, how to get people's attention in a way that will influence people to vote for godly values. I'm going to go back to what I said before, Tim, and that is, I believe, I think about Ezekiel, son of man. Remember that, that book inspired me so much when I was president of Concerned Women for America. Son of man, you're talking to a rebellious people, but whether they listen or they don't listen, you must speak the truth. And he repeats it again. Whether they listen or they don't listen, you must speak the truth. Whether they listen or they don't listen, you must speak the truth. That is what Ezekiel says over and over again. I will never forget that. And then I think about just historical people that I have admired. Martin Luther, who was going against the current of the entire Catholic Church teaching on indulgences and what it took to get to heaven. When he realized that really you can't get to heaven by kneeling a million times and saying a million things or paying somebody to get you into heaven or paying somebody to get your relatives into heaven. It was all a sham and he couldn't be silent. He didn't mean to break the church up. He just wanted them not to preach this apostasy. See, and so finally they pressed him. He was put in prison. He was arrested. He was brought before this tribunal, and he thought he was going to be killed because that was pretty much the pattern then. If you went against a teaching on any particular thing, you were considered a heretic. You were burned at the stake. It happened many times. It happened twice in St. Andrews, where my son lives. And so he was expecting to die. And when he was pressed, he finally said, I can't recant. I can't. He said, here I stand by what I've said. Here I stand. I can do no other. Martin Luther, in his case, was not killed. He was kidnapped by one of something from the Prince of Elector. I can't think of his name. He was kidnapped and put into a castle. That's during that time he wrote tremendous hymns. He wrote A Mighty Fortress. He translated the Latin Vulgate into German so that the German people could actually read the Bible. And then when he got out, people had started to read, and it started a movement that changed the entire course of the church, meaning the body of Christ. I'm not talking about the Catholic Church too, but one man made an incredible difference. I think of William Wilberforce, who fought against slavery in Great Britain for more than 20 years. Nobody moved an inch. Nobody cared a whit. And William Wilberforce just kept hammering away. It has been my experience that speaking the truth in time overcomes the lives of the enemy. That doesn't mean we're going to win politically, but I believe that God said what he said because it's true. Son of man, speak the truth. And whether they listen or they listen, you must speak the truth. And by the way, don't be weary in well-doing, for in due time you will reap a reward if you do not faint. So we're not going to faint. We're going to keep speaking the truth, right? God bless you, Tim, for all you've done to try to put your hat in the ring. I'm sure you've paid a big price for that financially, not every other way. So, but you did it right, sir. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
claiming to be wise, they became fools. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Some New Yorkers are displeased with one of the more predictable outcomes of a $15 minimum wage. Restaurants all over the city are raising their prices. The city's minimum wage went up to $15 from $13 or $13.50 at the beginning of 2019. But those who frequent New York restaurants are upset because restaurants are raising prices to adjust for the higher salaries they're now required by law to pay workers. Making matters worse, the minor increases restaurants are implementing aren't totally making up for the higher minimum wage. Who could have foreseen that arbitrary wage hikes made by politicians wouldn't work well for businesses?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You know, I'm learning in my own life that prayer is not so much always what I say to God, but it's listening to hear what He wants to say to me. I'm not a mystic and I don't hear voices, but in the quietness of my time before God, He speaks in my heart.
Don't miss Dr. David Jeremiah's message, All Stressed Up and Nowhere to Go, on the next Turning Point Weekend Edition.
Listen to Turning Point, Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. When you catch the media in unguarded moments, they reveal without even realizing it that they know it's a baby in the womb, not just a blob of protoplasm. In a truly amazing story from the UK, an unborn baby was surgically cured of spina bifida after being taken out of her mother's womb at 24 weeks, operated on by a team of surgeons, and put back in the womb for the remainder of the pregnancy. The mother, Beth Ann Simpson, and her husband were given the choice of aborting the baby, but instead chose life. Here's the kicker. In the story I read from Yahoo News, the baby is referred to as an unborn baby twice, a baby five times, a child twice, and Beth Ann was described as her mother three times. In other words, they know it's a baby.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Congress is expected shortly to approve legislation that would ostensibly end the impasse over border security and avoid a further partial government shutdown. President Trump has yet to say publicly whether he'll sign it. The specific temptation for Mr. Trump is the claim that he'll get money for 55 miles of border fencing, said to be a down payment for more in the years ahead. He also expects to be able to move funds from other accounts and order further barrier construction without specific congressional permission. Unfortunately, these options are likely to be effectively foreclosed by language open borders lawmakers have sneaked into the 1,000-page spending bill. Press reports indicate that it will enable state and even local officials to veto construction of any further border barriers. The president must veto any such legislation and use his authority to secure the border. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Interesting, Susan B. Anthony just did a poll. In the wake of all of this late-term abortion embrace, first by New York and then Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia, and the delegate Kathy Tran in Virginia, just a shocking discussion, so casual about the murder of children at that stage of life. So how do Americans feel about that? Well, Susan B. Anthony did a poll, and they found that 77% of voters want Congress to protect babies born alive. To break it down, 77% of voters support legislation to ensure that a baby who survives a failed abortion be given the same medical treatment as any other baby born prematurely. 62% of voters oppose legislation to allow late-term abortions. And the reason I mention that in this context, besides that I just want you to know that, because we've got some work to do. We can't seem to get our Congress to get this bill out on the table and vote for it. And that is to prevent those late-term abortions. But I want to contrast this. It kind of ties into my discussion a few minutes ago about speaking the truth. I can tell you that in the 1980s, if you were a pro-lifer, you were persona non grata. And I remember going to rallies, and I remember cameramen with their big cameras, if they saw someone really odd in the crowd, and you know what I'm talking about, an odd person jumping up and down screaming or holding an outrageous banner who happened to be pro-life, those are the people that made the headlines. All the movies, all the first ladies, living first ladies, were embracing abortion. The trend was abortion, abortion, abortion. And I have to say that through a strong pro-life movement and the speaking of the truth steadily dripping, this is a baby, this is a baby, it's wrong to kill babies, it's wrong, you can't do this, it's wrong. We have come to a place that I never thought we'd come to in this country, where people actually oppose abortion. Most Americans oppose abortion. And I know there are varying degrees of opposition on various details of it, but I just want you to know it does make a difference, speaking the truth steadily, 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 never giving up. A son of man, you must speak the truth. Whether they listen or they don't listen, you must speak the truth. And speaking of saving lives, we've been working with India Partners now for a few weeks, trying to not necessarily save lives physically, but save the lives of children in the full spectrum, whether it's their personal rescue from these brothels, also giving them food and shelter, but also their spiritual lives, telling them there's one true God. I want you to hear the story of Muskin. She's 13 years old. Before I introduce our guests, let's listen.
Growing up, it was very hard to see my mother, beat up every day. We didn't know what to do, except cry. Once my mom sent me here, my days became filled with joy. Now when I cry, they're happy tears. I don't lack anything here. I have food. I have clothing. I have shelter. I'm getting good education. And I have people who I know will listen to me and take care of me. I'm so happy that I get to keep growing as part of this family.
So that's the voice of Muskan. She's just one of the little girls that's been helped by Days of Hope. And by the way, our Indie Partners. And if you would like to help, and you haven't yet, our phone number is 877-616-2396. You might have been listening and also maybe gave something and you want to give more. Sometimes God works in our hearts in that way. It's 877-616-2396. Or you can go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and make your most generous pledge, whatever multiple of $7.08, which provides one day of safety. That's the way to go about it. My next guest is John Sparks. John is the CEO of India Partners, and he's the expert on this issue, and we're so glad he's joining us. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Sandy.
Hey, John, how long has India Partners been doing this?
We've been in India for 35 years, and we've been working in this area of anti-human trafficking for about 10 years now.
Whose vision was this? I mean, usually it's like somebody's heart is broken. God works through someone, and that's the spark. Is there a story like that for India Partners?
Well, it's actually the church. The church in India saw what was happening, and they said, we can't let this happen. We have to figure out ways to break this cycle of sex trafficking. And the church in America was also seeing the same thing, and Church in America came to India Partners and says, how can we help? And so we brought the two together. We brought the church in India and the church in the United States together to solve this problem.
You know, John, I think people don't think about the church in India, church, quote unquote, maybe Roman Catholic, but not necessarily evangelical. And I would say that when I was there in 2000, we were meeting with evangelical pastors. And during that time, there was such persecution of them. I remember a pastor and his son were burned alive in a car during that time. And so there's there's tremendous persecution for Christians in India, and that's pretty amazing to me that the Christian church in India is the one that was the spark for this. Can you describe for us, you know, is this one facility like a dormitory for boys and one for girls? How does that work?
Yes. So through the AFR listeners, what we've been able to do is we've secured these facilities where they're able to live, and it's a good neighborhood, nice facility, and close to a good school so they can walk to school. So all of these things combined give a great atmosphere for these children to grow up in.
How do you actually get them out?
We're right in the midst. We have a facility, a drop-in center right in the red light district, and we have women that go into the red light district as counselors every day, 6 days a week. In the morning, they spend time with the ladies that are there. We also have they call them Vivaldis. It's like a daycare center that's right alongside the red light district where the children can drop in on their way to school in the morning, have something to eat, get ready to go to school. And then when they come home after school, they come into the drop-in center, and then we help with their homework and give them something to eat again. So we developed that relationship both with the mother and with the children so that when the mother decides, I have to get my child out and there's no way to do it, this becomes a way to do it.
So the mothers are actually the catalyst here. That makes a lot of sense. You build a relationship with them. They trust you. And then the mothers are the catalyst to place their children with you?
Yes. Muskan's mother, for instance, she said, hey, I've got to get my daughter out. We cannot take a child before the age of 5. And I think Muskan was maybe 6 or 7 when she came. And when her mother said, let's do this, her pimp didn't like it because, you know, that was his future revenue source there. And so she got beat mercilessly for doing this. And but when her second daughter grew up also, she did the same thing again. And so it's a risky thing for these women because the pimps don't want these children, these young girls to leave because that's their future revenue source. But these women, they decide, I love my daughter, I love my son so much, I have to get them out.
So, John, do they live in your facilities for a lifetime till they can be independent?
Yeah, that's the, you know, the way that we have to go. When we bring them in, we have a commitment to them for their life. It's like one of our children, a girl child, especially in India. When she gets married, she comes back to her parents' home to give birth. The parent is involved even after. You know, independent. Independence is an American word. It's not an Indian word. there's an interdependence in family there so that we have that interdependence even after the children grow up and they become earners themselves. There's still that relationship is there.
Let me just get practical here because you're hearing John Sparks, who's the CEO of India Partners, talk about what's actually happening on the ground there. And if you would, you'd like to spend some money, some of your money, to make sure that these girls can continue to get the care and the rescue that they need. We don't even know what tomorrow's going to hold, and heaven knows how many little girls and boys, too, are in terrible situations even as we speak. And if you'd like to provide some money so that India Partners can actually help them, the phone number is 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or you can go to afr.net, afr.net, and make your donation, and just think about how much money you think you can give, and then maybe think about it in terms of days of safety that you're providing, and remember that $7.08 provides 1 day of safety. John, so these girls are there for a lifetime, but it's boys too, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the boys are in a different situation, but at the same time, growing up in a red light district, you're mind is shaped, your paradigm is shaped about the role of a man, which is nobody in their right mind would like a man that's like that. And so we also need to get those boys out so that they don't turn out like the men who visit the red light district.
I'm curious about something, John, because I really don't know the answer to this. It's a very sensitive, and but in Thailand, there's so much sex trafficking, and it's all kinds of sex. So is India more traditional? I'm kind of thinking the answer is going to be yes here. Is there homosexuality perpetrated on these little boys, or is that something you do or don't see?
It's not nearly as common as other places.
Yeah, you know, India has a very traditional family view, and actually, there is much to admire about how Indians love their families. Honestly, yes. Husbands and wives, and even the selection process for the mate and all of that. It's really, there are some things I think that we could learn from. I don't know if you would agree with me on that. In fact, I'll ask you.
Yes, I do. I agree. Oftentimes, people will say, my wife and daughter are both from India, and so Indians ask me, do you, you know, teach them Indian culture? I said, I teach them the family values of India. And that it is respect is there and caring for one another, and that family connection is very strong. And so it's, as you said, it's a very positive thing and one of the things that you can build on there. And by bringing these children out, you put them in a situation where you're able to reinforce those family values that are part of India, but not really present in the Red Light District.
Yeah. Phone number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or go to afr.net. John, I know we're talking in general about days of safety, but right now, where is this money? If they write out a check today, where is that money going to go?
A lot of it goes to, you know, the day-to-day living, food, shelter. We have good adult-child ratios in these homes. So there's a lot of people that are working with the children and helping them and nurturing them so that you have, you know, it's not one adult for 50 kids or anything like that. It's like one adult for like three or four children. And so that money goes to help pay some of those salaries so that these children have a human adult interaction that helps them and matures them. It also pays for their school. All these kids go to an English medium private school where they're able to learn in advance. They force the children to do these interviews in Hindi. They would say, oh, no, we want to speak English. But their English is a little bit hard to understand. So they say, no, you speak in Hindi and we'll translate and it works out better for us. But these girls are brilliant. They're smart. Muskan can pray better than some pastors can. So,
well, she's... I think it's dark. When life becomes really dark, we can see more of Jesus and feel more of his presence. And that's the good part about hard times, even though we don't want them. I think you would agree with that.
Yes.
John, our phone number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396. Some of you prefer to go online. I know that's afr.net, afr.net. We just have about a minute and a half. Can you think of one person besides Muskan who's maybe a graduate of the program or someone whose life has been so touched and altered by the work of India Partners?
There's a couple boys that I met that are just graduating out of the program. And these guys are working in banks. They're working as on ships. They're getting jobs that are paying a good salary that one day they'll get married and be able to support their family. And because of all of this development and nurturing that they've had, they'll be good husbands in the future. And so you're investing not just in a meal today, but in the future of these children.
Oh, that's great. That gives me chills, honestly. That's great. John Sparks, thank you so much for the work you've done as CEO of India Partners. And for the rest of you listening, the number again is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or go to afr.net. God bless each and every one of you. We all have a mission, don't we? So go forth, get in the Word, pray, and then let's do it. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.